part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you this morning? Or for me, it's morning. For you, I don't know what time it is.
It's evening. It's like 8 p.m.
Oh, wow. Great. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start off just by saying your name so I can pronounce it. Is it Anas?
It's Anas.
Anas. And last name?
Abdulhaq.
Abdul Haq. Okay, you're going to have to pronounce that for me because I'm the stupid American on this call. So,
And my book is called Etheris because a lot of people also go with Etheris or something like that. It's Etheris.
Etheris. Yeah, see, I was wondering about that too. I'm happy to sound completely ignorant on my own podcast. That's totally fine. But thank you for joining me. And you are based in Syria, correct?
So I'm originally from Syria, but I'm currently in Cyprus.
Okay, great.
Which is very close. It's just like right off the Mediterranean.
Yeah. I know my geography that much it's to know that. No, but thank you so much for joining me today. How are you and how are your family? How is everything in, you know, Syria, in that region of the world? I mean, we had sort of thought about connecting earlier, and then obviously the earthquake happened. So my first question to you, sir, is, you know, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It was a rough couple of months. Thankfully, most of my family is outside of Syria, but my mom is still there.
Oh my goodness.
And she was kind of affected by the earthquake. She was in Latakia at the time. And, you know, she felt her building shake and she had to flee and get on a bus and go to Damascus. It was a whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know, we barely felt it, like in Cyprus, and yeah. You know, it's been hard, to be honest. But I'm doing much better.
Okay.
I'm excited about Etheris finally being out into the world. It's my first published comic book, so it's huge, and the reception has been really good.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, but and it's from Source Point Press, correct?
Yes, it is.
Nice. Well, let me just start off too by saying that my name is Christian Horn, and this is the part-time fanboy podcast. It is the part-time fanboy podcast. I remember the name of my own podcast. So let me let you say your name again. Anas?
Abdulhaq.
Abdulhaq. And the project is?
Etheris.
Etheris. Okay. I keep wanting to default to the, but Etheris. Okay. And you will correct me or people will realize that I'm an idiot if I pronounce it incorrectly. But so I'm glad that everyone's okay. And at least in your family, in your region of the world, I mean, I was concerned when I first heard about the earthquake and I was just like, oh, is he okay, through your publicist, and not caring about the interview at all, just caring about that there's a human being over there that, you know, might be hurting or have a situation, you know, that obviously none of us, I guess, well, I live in Southern California, but nothing as devastating as what happened in that region of the world has happened for a long time here. So I'm glad that everyone's okay. I'm glad that you're okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so Etheris, let's begin by saying that this is out through, we just said, through Source Point Press. Is it currently on the stands? I think it was supposed to.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, it came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm like March 22nd. Is that correct? Or around that date? The reason I remember that is because it's my sister's birthday. So I remembered the date. But thank you so much for joining me. And thank you so much for sharing this beautiful project with me. I've read it over twice since you were nice enough to send it to me. And I mean, it's interesting for me to kind of try and explain the book because it is very different than a lot of other things that I've read before. I mean, the first thing that it reminds me of, and hopefully, I mean, I can't imagine that this wouldn't be a compliment, but it reminds me of something that like somebody like Neil Gaiman might do.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's high praise, but you know, it kind of reminds me of that. It's sort of like ethereal, it's poetic, it's not sort of like a straight narrative, but yeah. It is beautiful and it is absorbing. And the artwork is absolutely stunning. I mean, I was going to compare it to like Fiona Staples and Loish, if you've ever heard of those artists.
Of course.
You know, so for me, like opening it up, I was just like entranced and kind of like sucked in. My understanding is that writing, you are a poet, correct?
Yes. Essentially, I started off as a poet.
Yeah.
But, you know, comic books have always been a medium that I've been a huge fan of and a lover of. I've been reading comics most of my life. And so when it came to this project in particular, everything I've published before that was self-published. And it was always a mixture of comics and poetry. But for this one, I wanted to incorporate comics and normal kind of classic narration prose into the comic book as well.
Sure.
To just kind of help the story, you know, move forward. And I think it worked best in this way.
Sure. I mean, that to me was the most interesting thing was, you know, I've read many, many comics throughout the years, and this was very unique and different. And I had to sort of like read it twice to not understand the approach, but to be able to be like, because, you know, you read something on your first try and you're like, oh, okay, like this is different. And then I wanted to reapproach it again because A, it's just gorgeous, and I just wanted to try and understand it more. And I'm not saying it's hard to understand or anything like that, but for me, it's like I wanted to take it slowly, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, honestly, it was written in a way that it's vague and abstract enough for the reader to kind of apply their own experiences and their own story to it.
Sure.
I didn't want to overshare or like, you know, give you everything, you know, served on a platter. I really wanted it to be like sort of interactive in that sense that when you're reading it, you're kind of filling the gaps with your own choices, with your own thoughts.
Yeah.
I've had many people, you know, who've read it, have gotten different endings, have, you know, gotten certain emotions out of it. And I think it's beautiful that way. Like for me, it's a very personal story, but it also gives a chance for everyone who reads it to also make it personal to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to me in a way that I needed to revisit it because it's not like other comics where it's like, oh, I want to read the story again. To me, it was almost like I wanted to experience it again. Like I wanted to sort of like dive into that world again. And I don't really read books like twice, like as soon as I get them, you know, like I'll read something and be like, okay, you know, that's great. And then revisit it maybe years later. But this was definitely something that I felt like I had to, you know, take in, absorb, and appreciate on a different level than sort of your average comic book. And to me, that's a very good thing, right?
Thank you. Yeah, of course. It sure sounds like it.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, there's a couple of like big questions that sort of jump into my head. Again, being the ignorant American, you know, how did you discover comic books? You know, how, I mean, you were, did you say born in Syria? Is that where you're originally from?
I was born and raised in Syria.
Okay.
I lived there up until 18.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, comics were not really a thing that was readily available.
Yeah,
back
yeah.
Home. I remember the first comics I read were really digitally, and they were kind of like pirated just because back home. I was like, you know, 6 or 7 years old. At that point, my English had improved to a level where I could actually read in English.
Yeah.
So I'm asking my brother to like download a bunch of X-Men comics for me because I was a huge fan of the X-Men animated series and the 2000 movie.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, my first comics were the 1964 original Uncanny X-Men.
Nice.
Yeah, and I read a huge chunk of that series up until, like, you know, I started growing up and I had access to actually buy digital comics or, you know, when, you know, I would buy the trade paperbacks of my favorite books and get them shipped to me just because I wanted to have them, you know, in my hands.
Yeah.
But that's how I started, really.
Nice. And I mean, like taking in those comics in particular, like the X-Men comics, right? Like that's a different level than say something like Avengers or maybe even Superman or Batman, right? Like that's a whole other, you know, I mean, it involves like, I mean, that's what they call it today, but there's a whole level of like social justice in there. And how did that affect you as a kid, particularly growing up where you were growing up?
Honestly, it did feel very, you know, part of why I love the X-Men so much is because they're so political, because they do tackle so many different themes and metaphors when it comes to their members and how they're ostracized from their societies. And I always, you know, I felt different. Like, you know, I was not like other kids back home. So I really found solace in a lot of these characters, you know, like Kitty Pryde. I found a lot of comfort in her being different and her being shunned by her family, you know. So for me, comics have always been something that is a force, is a, you know, a medium for you to tell stories, but also kind of like share ideas and messages. And I think that's one of the most powerful things in the world is, you know, we use storytelling in that sense.
Yeah.
Not that they're, you know, I don't appreciate my bombastic, slapstick, you know, super action heavy books. Yeah. Those are also in their own way. But, you know, for me as a writer, that's what I like to approach. I like to share a story that is, you know, encapsulated in a visual medium that's so stunning and gorgeous, but at the same time, I'm sharing a very personal message.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so it's interesting. I'm going to go down this path a little more because on a personal level, like when I was younger, I lived in South America for like a year in Colombia, and I was not prepared for it. Like I was so Americanized, like I was not ready. And one of the things that I didn't, you know, I didn't speak Spanish as well as English, I will say that. And then the other thing too, was that comics were not like readily available, or at least the ones that I was used to. Right. So in your upbringing and stuff, I mean, you're getting like pirated, whatever, X-Men comics and stuff like that. Were comics something that was readily available to the other kids? Was it something that you could discuss with other people? Or were you just like sort of like living on an island as a comic book lover, you know, where you were growing up?
I really was living on an island.
I identify. Yep, yep.
I literally have not met a single person who reads comic books until I was in college.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So like growing up, you know, I would be reading these books and, you know, of course, there was it was a very huge detachment. Like my friends in school were aware of who the X-Men were.
Sure.
But that's because of the movies, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, you don't know anything. Like I know the X-Men.
Yeah.
You don't know X-Men until you know Dazzler, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really isolating. There are comics that were available, but they're most like, you know, Arabic comics that were like produced and created by, you know, Middle Eastern creators.
Yeah.
So we had this magazine. It was a weekly magazine called Majid. And that one contained like, you know, puzzles and crosswords and little fun, you know, mini games, but also some like original comics and stories that were mostly slice of life.
Okay.
And, you know, things that were about like family and friendship and things like that. Very like, you know, childlike.
Yeah.
But no, English comics or like American comics, not a thing. Yeah. I do know that in Egypt, there was like in the 90s, they did like get the license to publish some Batman, Superman, X-Men, and Punisher comics.
Okay.
Yeah. But that was like a very limited run. There were miniseries only, translated directly from the English comics. And that was that, really.
Wow.
But I think now it has been like a bit of a shift because the internet became so, you know, everyone uses the internet now and everyone has access to it and everyone can easily buy comics online. So there, you know, the number of people who read comic books nowadays in the Middle East has grown astronomically.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you're so lucky because when I was a kid, there was no internet, there was nothing. And it was just like the biggest thing that I had in Colombia was this thing called Condorito, and it just drove me crazy. I couldn't stand it. I mean, it's a huge comic in South America and Central, but to me, I was just like, I can't stand this. But yeah, so I understand that feeling of sort of being on the island and being interested in something and not necessarily being able to like run to the kids and be like, check out Iceman or whatever, you know, like this is awesome. Jean Grey or whatever, like that's pretty cool. So, I mean, I guess I'm very curious as well to, so poetry, like how did you discover poetry? How did you discover that aspect of writing? Was that like your first, I mean, you grew up on comics, but I'm assuming that in your writing career or aspirations that maybe writing comics wasn't the first step?
It was not really, no.
Yeah.
I've always dreamed of making comics in some sort of capacity, but I never wanted it to be like, I never thought it would be a career or something that I would really dive into this level. So for poetry, you know, I grew up reading Arabic poetry, which is very melodic, very symphonic. It relies heavily on rhyme and weight of the words.
Yeah.
And that's something that I could not find in English poetry. So growing up, like, I love Arabic poetry so much. I love that it's almost, lyrical, really. And when I started reading English poetry and I was reading contemporary poetry like Bukowski and things like that, I didn't find the same structure. And so in my writing, I wanted to really bring that element of Arabic poetry into English. And that's why you could see that, like, in my writing, it is very melodic. It is very, heavily relies on rhyme.
Gotcha.
It may not be the classical, English structure of poetry, which I have received that as a criticism, but it is poetry after all. At the end of the day, it's a very broad medium, and you could experiment with it, and that's what I wanted to do.
Sure.
As for writing in general, I didn't actually go to film school,
Oh, you did or
and
you did not?
I did. I did.
Oh,
I went
okay.
to,
Oh, okay.
yeah, and I dreamt of being a screenwriter because I thought that was the most accessible way for me to share my stories and tell my stories. But
Gotcha.
then, hurdles came along the way of, like, budgeting and things like that, and I resorted to comics to share my stories. And my very first self-published comic book was actually meant to be a short film at the beginning, but I
Okay.
restructured and rewrote it to be a comic book.
Nice. Nice. Was that structure very much like this book, or was it different? I mean, was it sort of like the poetic, lyrical kind of like structure?
It was also very poetic, but that one was even way more abstract. I really hit the ground running with the abstract stuff right away. I was really worried that people were not gonna, connect with my work because it was so weird and so different from what usual comic books are. But I was very lucky to find a community in, like, the indie comic book scene over on Twitter, for example, where so many people have, appreciated that I was doing something so different, and I kind of, like, carved out a niche for myself where I was able to continue telling stories in this way and find people who appreciate them. So I'm very, very grateful for that.
Oh, so this is very interesting to me. So, I mean, you went to film school and you studied screenwriting, but what you seem to have embraced is a more poetic, lyrical form of storytelling. How does that necessarily work for you? Because obviously screenwriting, or at least my knowledge, the books that I've read on it, it's very sort of structural. It's very like this, and the first 10 pages, and then once you get to the 20 pages, and then blah blah blah, and the function of dialogue and theme and all that stuff. How did you approach your sort of screenwriting with that love of like lyrical poetry that you had, in your background? Like, were your screenplays different as well?
Yeah, they were.
Oh,
Actually,
okay. So you were towing you were going up the hill, right? Like you were.
I am really, like, marching to the beat of my own drum.
Yeah, that's good though. That's good.
Every single film that I did in film school was very, like, art film, very avant-garde. I never really did anything that had dialogue in it.
Okay.
It was mostly just, we're, like, playing with the lighting and the camera angles and the effects to sort of, like, deliver a message. I
Oh,
remember a
wow.
project that I did that I was very passionate about, had just, like, not a single word, no narration, nothing. It was just music and the visuals.
Oh,
And
wow.
that was my favorite thing that I ever did. It was a very, like, high concept art film.
Oh, wow. Is your work online anywhere? Can people see it, or like your film work?
It is not. It's mostly, like, unlisted on YouTube. It's like, it's big, I don't really share my work that often.
Oh, okay.
Just
Gotcha.
because, I was a student, no matter how good a student film is, it's not gonna be that good, Like, I'm realistic about that.
Sure,
But
sure. It's
I'm
always
proud
kind of
of what
fun
I
to
did
see
at
stuff
the
like
time.
that, though. Oh, no. So that's interesting. So you were approaching things from a very different perspective. It's funny that you would go in, and study film and study screenwriting and then just be like, not like disregarding it, but being like, okay, I'm just gonna go do my own thing. Like, you know what I mean? Because and that's good though, because I mean it's like you're sort of like are were your films sort of like the to me maybe like weird like Andy Warhol, like you know what I mean? Like
Very much, yeah. Andy is a huge inspiration, yeah.
nice, nice, nice. That's so were you making like 24-hour films that people would have to like sit through?
Oh,
Like
God. No. It was actually, like, just very short stuff that would be, like, impactful and, gut-wrenching in a very time span.
Oh, okay. So, speaking in that, manner, who are some of your favorite filmmakers? I mean, we mentioned kind of Andy Warhol, but I mean, what were some of the things that spoke to you growing? Because I mean, it's a long way from the X-Men movie to, the stuff that you're talking about, right?
You know, like, you know, you know, people don't get this, but like one of my favorite filmmakers is Edgar Wright.
Okay.
I love everything he does. Like Scott Pilgrim, both the comics and the movie.
Yeah.
Is like one of my favorite, you know, things ever.
Yeah.
So Edgar Wright, I think he's a huge inspiration, but I while I appreciate what he does, I know that that's not what I want to do or sure. I maybe could do, you know?
Sure.
But you know, I really appreciate the kind of work that he does. I think it's very difficult to tell a very like an engaging story and inject these kind of artistic feel into it, because what he does is like, you know, if you look at Scott Pilgrim, for example, or Baby Driver, any of his works for that sake, the way he plays with transitions and the way he plays with the storytelling, it's very unique, but it's also very entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think that's something very difficult to like balance.
Yeah.
But you know, David Lynch is also a huge inspiration for me.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And I grew up watching Twin Peaks. So of course, one of my favorite things, and I love the whole like mystery and mystique to it. And you know, how absurdist and abstract it is, really. It's just like very strange, and that's something I love to put into my work as well.
Sure. Yeah, you know, it's funny because for me, I mean, I originally moved long time ago to Los Angeles to pursue a career as an actor, and it's funny how things like develop as far as my growth or like growth in what I appreciate in film and movies and stuff, and how it kind of goes back and forth, because a lot of the things that I discovered like in the indie scene, I grew towards because I was bored, like with the stuff that was kind of, you know, fed to us as, or fed to me as a kid. And I was like, it seems like the same thing over and over again. And, you know, Lynch and even Edgar Wright and stuff like that, it's just so different that you kind of like, I mean, I'll never forget like seeing my first David Lynch movie and just being like, what the hell? I mean, I think I saw it as a Blue Velvet as a teenager, like on VHS or something, like in a friend's basement. We were watching it and just being like, what the hell is this? Like, I don't even know what I'm, are we even supposed to be watching this? You know, like that sort of thing. And so that's interesting to me. So, I mean, as far as like the development of your own personal style or your own likes or dislikes, I mean, you obviously, we kind of all start off with the X-Men and Superman and stuff like that. How did you discover comics that sort of influenced your work now?
Well, you know, around, I think, 2013-ish, I got into indie comics.
Okay.
I read, you know, of course, the greats, like, you know, Neil Gaiman's The Sandman and things like that.
Sure.
But then, you know, I slowly started gravitating towards some of my favorite creators. You know, I'm a huge fan of Jeff Lemire. I think he's brilliant, and I've read every single thing he's probably done.
Okay.
So, you know, I started getting more and more into the indie comics, and mostly I was reading stuff from Image, but then I started reading like some, you know, less popular stuff. And that's when I got into like, you know, self-published stuff and like really indie stuff that people were just self-publishing. And I thought there was like a huge amount of gems in there, like really hidden gems. But yeah, you know, indie comics have been a huge influence on me. I love Jeff Lemire. I love Brian K. Vaughan. Greg Smallwood is one of my favorite artists. And when I was like looking for artists for this project, I really wanted to emulate his work, and I wanted them to like, you know, I wanted someone with a similar style.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Dennis came along, and I felt he was very, he gave me like a lot of vibes of the same, like, you know, I'm going to mess up his surname for sure. But Bill Sienkiewicz.
Oh yeah. Sienkiewicz. Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce it. Yeah.
You know, I love his art. I love his New Mutants run. And I was like, oh my God, we have to do something together with this style.
Oh, that's so funny. That, you know, it's so funny because I didn't really appreciate Sienkiewicz until I got older. Like when I was reading those comics as a kid, I was like, this is weird. I don't, you know, and then I think I discovered more of his advertising stuff. And I was like, oh, wait, like there's something crazy going on here. And now, obviously, I consider the man a genius, as everyone does. But it's funny because, what's the name of the artist again of your book?
Dennis Menier.
I mean, his work, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is Sienkiewicz to me is always like very angular and like stylish and like very forceful. Mm-hmm. And your artist on this book is very soft and like pulls you in. And it's a very sort of like gentle style. I mean, it's intense, but that's interesting to me that you would pull Sienkiewicz from that.
Well, you know, it's really about how Sienkiewicz uses the color as a storytelling device.
Yeah.
And
okay.
We really wanted to do that with, you know, with Etherus. Like, we, as you're reading the book, as the story progresses, the color palettes shift and change to push certain emotions.
Sure.
And I think Dennis did that brilliantly, especially when things get like really intense or when they get really soft. Like after, you know, for example, she emerges from the lake and suddenly everything was like wet, that went from dark green and dark reds to like purple, like purple and pink and soft.
Yeah.
And you know, that really was like an emphasis on how her emotional journey was going through color.
Yeah.
And that's what I really appreciated about Dennis's style.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the style is just gorgeous. I mean, it cannot be denied that I looked at this book and opened it and I was like, oh, this is nice. Like, I like this, like, very cool. How did you find him?
I think it was over on a Facebook group.
Oh,
it was,
okay.
There's this Facebook group called Connecting Comic Book Writers and Artists.
Okay.
And you would always scour it and like bookmark folks who are really talented just so I could, you know, collaborate with them in the future. And Dennis had posted something along the lines of like, hi, I've never done a comic book before. But here's like a link to my Instagram. You could see some of my illustrations.
Yeah.
And I just clicked on the link like on a whim and I fell in love with his work and I immediately DM'd him and I was like, hi, we need to work together. Like, I love your style. So yeah, Etherus was the very first comic like sequential work he's ever done.
Oh wow, really? Like full yeah. book. Wow.
Full book.
Wow.
Never even done like sample pages. It was just illustrations, really.
Wow.
So I think, you know, he's also been reading comics his whole life. So he drew a lot of inspirations from his favorite artists coming into this project. And you know, his paneling work is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was ready to enter comics at that point. He'd always wanted to make comics but never felt like quite ready.
Sure.
And I think it was the project that was like, okay, maybe I could do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, your writing and his style of art blends perfectly. You know what I mean? Like, it's a really great balance of, I mean, I've said it before, but it's almost dreamlike, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. And it is very much like opening up a dream when you read mm-hmm. this book. His work and mixed with your sort of narrative in there, I mean, just really makes it seem like you're, you know, going through a dreamscape.
Yeah, that's really what we were going for. And there was a lot of synergy, really, in the work. Like, by the time we got to working on Etherus, we had become very good friends. So we had chemistry, we had the rapport. And so there was a lot of back and forth on the visuals and how to best tell the story.
Uh-huh.
And I had actually rewritten the entire script of Etherus to his style.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I had visuals in mind, but I kept thinking, how would Dennis approach this? And I literally rewrote the script to suit his work best.
Oh, nice. Nice. I mean, because that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about this. I mean, obviously my knowledge of comic book writing and, you know, it's very much like Marvel style, DC style, panel one, or just general descriptions. How do you go about writing something that's sort of like based in poetry or based in the language of poetry as you see it? Because for me, I was reading this and I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool and interesting and very different. But at the same time, I was like, how do you approach an artist? Like, are you breaking down the panels? Like, she, you know, she's walking through the woods and then there's the creature. And like, how did you approach the script? And then you said that you had to change it or that you felt like changing it. How much was different by the time you were done from when you started?
So, you know, there's always been the story of like, you know, Valerie emerging from the egg and all the way to the end about yeah. the trials and tribulations that she goes through. So the rewriting was really about how to best like write the angles and the shots for Dennis's style, which would complement his work. But the story remained the same. As for the script, you know, it was very much like, you know, for the narrative pieces, it was very common, like, you know, classic comic book script breakdown of like each panel, what takes place in each panel.
Uh-huh.
For the splash pages, those were the really poetic ones. And I had to sort of like take the general emotion or feeling that I wanted to disseminate through the page, through the poem, and just write down what I think would be a good visual to accompany the poem.
Uh-huh.
And even that was like a lot of, you know, back and forth with Dennis approaching it in different ways, because I also wanted him to like process it and, you know, interpret it in his own way. So I always used to tell him, like, whatever you see on the script, it's merely a suggestion. So if you want to ignore it, you can outright ignore it and do your thing. Trust your vision. But yeah, I felt like what we did with the splash pages, which are the ones that are really poetic, was just try to enforce the feelings that were present in the poem and interpret them in a visual style.
Sure. So I mean, I usually tend to dive into these conversations and just speak to the creators, but we haven't really talked about what Etherus is about. What sort of like your general, I mean, I don't believe like you can just give like an elevator pitch for this type of thing because it's so, I mean, you know, kind of broad in its like interpretation, or I mean, not really, right? But I mean, do you want to let people know like what is Etherus? What is it about? What is it? Because I didn't know what it, like from the beginning of the email to where it's like, hey, would you like to have this person on your podcast? To the point of where I read the book, I had forgotten the initial description in the email. So I didn't know like what I was going to look at. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I opened it up and I was like, oh, and I like that, right? Like it was like, I didn't know what to expect. And it was a very, you know, I didn't have background, you know, I was just like, okay, I'm going to interview this creator who's originally from Syria. Like, that's really cool. Like technology, it's wonderful. We can connect across the world and stuff like that. That sort of stuff gets me excited. But then I started reading the book and I was like, oh, hey, this is really interesting. But how do you describe it to people?
So the elevator pitch has always been like, it's a poetic tale of where souls go when they don't belong anywhere else. You know, we wanted to tell the story of a character called Valerie, who is plagued by self-loathing and, you know, this guilt. And so she's processing it in a way after her death where she ends up in this realm called Etherus. And it's where souls go and they don't belong anywhere else. When there's like, they don't belong in a biblical sense of like the afterlife of like heaven or hell. They're just kind of lost souls and they're in this middle realm, you know. So in this journey on Etherus, in Etherus, she starts to kind of reconcile with herself and face her demons head on. And she faces these trials and tribulations that force her to really reflect upon her life and who she was as a person and why she believes she deserves to be in Etherus. So it's a journey of like self-forgiving. It's, you know, a journey of reckoning with your past and who you are or your perception of who you are as a person.
Sure.
And just embracing the past to move forward.
So would you say that it is like kind of like a purgatory type of existence that she's experiencing in this book, or?
You could say so. That is what definitely like a valid interpretation. For me, like, I'm going to spoil it for anybody who's listening.
Don't spoil it. We want people to buy the book.
Okay, well, for me, it wasn't really purgatory. It was more like a mental state of just, you know, wanting to move forward, but you're still stuck behind in like things that you did in your present life. And it doesn't really have to be like the afterlife. You know, the afterlife is just a vessel for the story, but you could take a look at it and see it in so many different ways. Like if you're stuck in, you know, dealing with a certain trauma, the best way to move forward is for you to face it head on, right?
Sure.
And so it's kind of like therapeutic in that way. The realm that we based it on, the fantastical, dreamlike, ethereal world that we built around the story, is just a vessel for the character to progress and for her to like heal. So you could look at it in a number of ways. We've had people see it as a purgatory. We've had people see it as, you know, a dream. Like it's not even real. Like maybe she's not even dead in the first place. It's just her, you know, dealing with things. So any kind of interpretation that you would like to go about seeing it in a way would work. But for me personally, it is like, it is the afterlife. And I wanted to tell a story about the afterlife where maybe there isn't a hell, heaven or hell. Okay. And maybe our hell is what we make of it. It is, is our personal demons. And we have to find a way to move forward and, you know, truly find peace by making peace with ourselves.
Wow. I mean, yeah, it's interesting, the concepts and the ideas that are sort of like involved in this book. Can you speak to me about wanting to approach it the way you did instead of like a more direct fashion? And have you gotten any, do you ever get any resistance? Because like once you start like, oh, it's poetic and poetry and stuff like that, is there, you know, I can imagine like people just sort of like, what, poetry? Like, you know, not slamming poetry. I think it's fine. You know, it's great. But you know, there's definitely, there's comic book readers who might be like, I don't know, like what is going on here? have you, like, how did you feel about approaching it this way? I mean, it's the way you work. And have you ever gotten any resistance, like, when you were pitching it, possibly?
I have. I really have.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I totally know that what I'm doing is very, like, niche and does not have a broad audience.
Okay.
And totally fine by me. But, you know, when you're
say that, I would just say, like, you need to, it's an audience that needs to discover you, in my opinion, right?
That's true. But, you know, a lot of publishers that are putting out books on a monthly basis, they really care about the bottom line and,
sure,
you know, getting a book out there that is going to immediately find success, you know, and not really have to, like, sculpt its way to find its audience. So I did get, you know, a lot of rejections when I was pitching Etheris. Not a lot of publishers, you know, responded and things like that. But, you know, SourcePoint Press was really impressed by the book and they really wanted to publish it, because SourcePoint does, like, they do take risks when publishing, you know, different books. They don't mind taking the oddball out, you know?
Sure.
So they were happy to publish it, which I was really grateful for. I really wanted this book to, like, go to the direct market and hopefully find its audience in the best way that, you know, possible. But even after its release, I have, like, received comments of people who thought it was too convoluted or confusing, or they didn't enjoy the aspect of it. And that's all totally valid. Like, you know, different strokes for different folks and everybody likes their own thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was, you know, I was very adamant on telling the story in this way. And I'm glad that I was able to.
Yeah. Well, talk to me about the idea of, because it's one issue, right? It's not a series and stuff like that. And it's not necessarily like 100-page, like, sort of graphic novel. It's kind of like a one shot. What are the difficulties of approaching, like, that sort of thing? Like, because I mean, is it easier to sell, like, just a one shot, or is it harder? Is it, like, you know, something that's not an ongoing series or even a mini series, right? Like, it comes out and that's it, and people get it, and, you know, if they want more, they're screwed. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, what is your approach to, I guess, the idea in your head and then selling it that way?
So this is, like, my third one shot.
Yeah.
Right? I've self-published two other one shots before. They were also poetic. And I think what the difficulty with this kind of approach of doing a one shot is you have to make sure you tell your story in a limited amount of pages.
Yeah.
You can't really go overboard. And you really have to, like, captivate the reader's attention throughout every panel to, like, keep them hooked until the very end.
Yeah.
And it has to be satisfying. It can't leave you wanting more, because there can't be more, you know, as you said.
Sure.
But I think as for, you know, advertising it as a one-shot, I think it's actually beneficial to me, because a lot of people would be willing to give something, you know, out of the ordinary or something that's not really too familiar to them. They would be willing to give it a go if it's a one-shot rather than an ongoing story that's, like, 50 issues long, right? If it's poetic and there's, like, they're not a huge fan of poetry.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I was really able to, like, find an audience, thankfully, and people did connect with it. People who read it have, you know, told me, like, you know, that they didn't think they would enjoy it, but they did, because poetry is not a thing that they go for usually.
Yeah.
So I think in that sense, it was an advantage for me to do it as a one-shot. And I think, you know, it was always going to be a one-shot. I don't know how I could have told the story over several issues or several arcs. It is a one and done.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think I saw you sort of self-published your other work through Zoop or something like that, like crowdfunded, and like one book, right?
My first project was Eleutheromania. It was a one shot as well. I self-published that, just, like, posted it up on, you know, online reading websites like Global Comics and Tapas and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
And the second one, I had to self-fund it, because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to send physical copies around the world and things like that. So I needed the funding for it.
Yeah.
So I worked with Zoop and we crowdfunded that. And the third one was Etheris.
Nice, nice. And Etheris, like, you just went around and pitched it? And, like, did you have, like, the full thing done, like, illustrated, like, all lettered and things to go? Or were you trying to pitch a concept as you went around?
No, by the time I was pitching it, we had about 20 pages done.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, we had a good chunk. But most publishers only ask for, like, 5 or 6 finished pages. So just so they could see, like, a proof of concept.
Uh-huh.
So we sent it to every single publisher that I could think of. And really, SourcePoint Press was the only one that got back to us.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, good for them and good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen a lot of their stuff and they publish some interesting stuff and things like that. What is sort of, I mean, now that it's kind of, like, out in shops, like, are you able to pick it up in, like, your region of the world? Like, where you live right now? Is it?
I am not.
Oh,
actually haven't seen any of my comics in my hands yet.
Oh, really? Like at all? Yeah, ever?
At all, no. But my, like, Dennis is sending me a care package from, you know, Netherlands. Nice. He's sending me a bunch of stuff, and one of them is Etheris, and I asked him to sign it for me just so I could have my personal copy signed by him. And he would have been here today, but he's actually signing in Amsterdam right now. He's at a Hank Comics shop. So
hell yeah! If I was signing something in Amsterdam, I wouldn't be on this call either. No, that's great. No, I mean, for me, it's very interesting, sort of the way you're working in comics. I mean, it's very different. I mean, I have not seen your previous two projects, but at least with this one, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And there's definitely an audience for it, for sure. And this is probably not something like that I would have initially been like, okay, but the art, like picking it up and reading it, like it just sucks you in and you're just sort of like absorbed in it. And again, it's very much like a dreamlike state. And I have to say that whatever you were trying to do with this, I mean, you were very successful because at least for me, I was like, hey, I'm sucked in, you know, like I had to read it twice because I was like, I want to make sure that not that I'm getting it, but like that I'm fully absorbed in what I'm reading.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really glad that I was able to successfully, you know, tell the story and captivate some people. Like the people who have resonated with the book have, you know, come to me and shared some very personal stories of how they saw the story ending, yeah, and connected it to their personal experiences. And that has been the most fulfilling thing, honestly. Like, that's all I've ever wanted to do with comics, was just to tell stories that hopefully resonate with someone and help them in some sort of way.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about like sort of your own personal connection? Because I mean, I did bounce around the web a little bit and saw a little bit of story. Like, what is the pull from this? I mean, obviously the area of the world that you've lived in, like Syria, I mean, I don't know the civil war and all that stuff. Did you live through a lot of that? Like, were you out before? Or I don't know your age, so.
I did. I lived through quite a few years. I lived through 8 years of the war, really.
My God. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, I grew up around a lot of, you know, death in my life, which is unfortunate, but that's the kind of the hand that we were dealt in Syria. But really, like, Etheris came from my father's passing, and which was like a very difficult thing for me to process because we had a very tumultuous relationship, and okay, I didn't really know how to process it. So I did what I usually do, which is just go to poetry. You know, I start writing all my feelings out and all my emotions.
Yeah.
And I needed to kind of detach myself from the pain and the you know, the trauma that I was going through. And so I just projected all my feelings onto a fictional character and had them deal with it for me.
Yeah.
Which is how Etheris was born, how Valerie was born.
Yeah.
It's just me trying to process my pain through this character. And it's a very cathartic way, really, to just like tell a story that has a beginning, middle, and end. And there's like a kind of resolution to that, to the pain that you're experiencing personally. It's a very cathartic way in that sense.
Yeah.
So that's how Etheris was born, really.
Is that something that you generally do to process things, like journal through poetry, like go straight to your writing and things like that?
Oh yeah. Everything I've put out so far has actually been, you know, me processing pain and or like certain emotions in a different way. Like Eleutheromenia was really about liberation and freedom. And it was me trying to, like, you know, reconcile with those feelings and just having a lot of different thoughts about freedom, really, in the sense that I've been wanting to get out of Syria for so long. When I was growing up, it was like the only thing I ever dreamt of was like going to America or going to Europe and just like, you know, being free and doing whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
But when I actually did leave Syria, I had this kind of like cultural shock where like everything I thought I knew was you know, taken, you know, like gone at that point.
Yeah.
And so I had to really find myself again and, you know, learn how to exist outside of my bubble, which even though it was like a very bad bubble for me, but I was comfortable in it because it was familiar.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was where Eleutheromenia came from.
Yeah.
And, you know, Objects in the Mirror was really about finding, you know, finding friendship and finding, you know, your found family, your chosen family, and in the people that are around you when you're far away from home and you don't have a home to call, you know, anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I mean, it's interesting to me because the thing that comes up in my brain, right, is that a lot of us use art as therapy, right? Or as an escape, or as like a balance. Like I like to draw, right? I'm not a necessarily professional illustrator, but I like to draw. I don't illustrate professionally, you know, as a professional. That is so dumb what I just said. I mean, I do other graphic art, like the, as a professional, like I do other things, but not necessarily illustration, like a lot of manipulation of imagery and photography and stuff like that. But as far as illustration, that's not my profession. But what's interesting to me is that, especially in speaking to you, and this project is very much like what a lot of us who are interested in art or create art use it for, is as therapy or as an escape or as a coping mechanism, right? But that doesn't always necessarily translate into commerce, right? And to me, it just seems like such a shame that maybe this conversation is bringing up a lot of like my own stuff, where it's like the stuff that is most powerful, the stuff that is most moving, doesn't always necessarily translate into the things that the general public even wants to embrace or absorb, right?
That's very true. Yes.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's not to say that that's the case in this book. I mean, I think anyone who would pick it up would be like, oh wow, this is beautiful. It's poetic. It's lyrical. It's moving. And, you know, but I also feel like, yeah, I mean, it's good that you're using that to create things like this, in my opinion.
I mean, if I wanted to, I mean, I don't really wish for fame or fortune or success in that kind of sense. If sure. I wanted to, I probably would have gone about making comics in a different way or telling different stories.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm trying, you know, what I want to do is just tell my story and hopefully connect with other people. I wrote an afterword for Etheris that didn't make it to print. But in it, I said, you know, I just, like, my purpose for this comic book is to hopefully, you know, you find comfort in seeing these difficult emotions being embraced rather than being shunned.
Yeah.
And that's all I really wanted, really, was just to connect with readers and share my story and hopefully for them to like resonate with it and find some comfort in seeing kind of this pain being embraced and, you know, portrayed in such a beautiful way.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that's one of the things that I find to be that in which you've gained my respect or being respectful of you, because I mean, you're obviously using real emotion and real feelings and real experience to create something that's different. And, you know, like we were talking about the X-Men before, and it's like, why couldn't they just write about, you know, civil rights? You know what I mean? Like, because at the time nobody would buy it, right? Like if you had created a book about, you know, unfortunately, let's say the 60s in the United States of America, that was about a team of black superheroes. Let's be honest, like maybe nobody would have bought that, or maybe they would have, like maybe it would have been a breakthrough, but nobody was willing to kind of take that chance. And for me, when I see artists like you in any medium, like that definitely is like, oh, wow. Like that gets a lot of respect from me. So I don't know that there's a question in there, but I guess I just wanted to say that, you know what I mean? That I think it's very cool that you've created something and it's from the heart, or it's from your experience, you know, your trauma and your upbringing, and you've translated it into something and you had to put it out into the world. And it's a beautiful thing.
Thank you so much. That means a lot, really.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess like what, being that this is a one shot, what is your approach forward? You know, like, are you interested in doing like a continuing narrative? Is that, or do you just want to kind of create? I mean, I guess it's like poetry, right? Like you write a poem and you put a poem and maybe they get collected into a book, but the poem is like a small, unless it's an epic poem, like Beowulf or something. But I'm saying like, you know, in a, are you going, do you want to continue down this path of like singular works, or is there a long form narrative that you're more interested in? Or like, do you want to continue in comics? Is it filmmaking that you're interested in embracing next?
Definitely continuing comics. I am, you know, going all in.
Okay.
But my future projects, which I'm currently working on right now, are very different from my previous stuff. I am really reaching out and, you know, showing some range and versatility.
Okay.
I'm really experimenting and going outside of my comfort zone. I'm working on like a middle grade graphic novel right now.
Oh, nice.
Which is a huge departure. It's very cute, very innocent, very adventure, high fantasy kind of thing.
Nice.
But I've also got some, like, you know, different stuff. I'm working on my first miniseries right now, which is a, you know, neo-noir horror book.
Oh, nice.
It's going to have, like, some, like, body horror involved and psychological thriller elements. Very David Lynchian style.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, but it's going to be, you know, it's still going to be really, like, me and sharing kind of like my story through comics. For this one, like, I'm really incorporating a lot of Syrian mythology. The main character is Syrian American, so I really wanted to bring that forth and like share some of my culture in this character.
Sure.
But you know, in a sense of like, it's a, you know, detective murder mystery kind of story.
Oh, wow. That is different.
It is very different, yeah. And it's a classic narrative. There's dialogue and everything.
Oh, wow. So there's dialogue and everything. So, I mean, is that a change that you sort of felt like you had to make yourself? Or is it pressures of the marketplace, like that sort of thing? Is it just...
It's always been planned, really. Like,
okay.
I've always wanted to put out these three stories that are very poetic, establish myself and, you know, show what I could do. And then I wanted to tell different stories in different formats, including Elysian, which the one I just mentioned that I'm working on right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And do you have publishers nailed down for those, or is that something you're gonna go pitch around? Or
we're pitching around. We're hoping to pitch around very soon.
Got you.
But I mean, I'm really glad that like Etheris kind of, you know, the good word of mouth around Etheris was very positive. So it is kind of like helping open some doors.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have representation, thankfully, right now. I have an agent. So.
Oh, good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So hopefully I'll be able to, like, it'll be easier to tell, you know, to find a home for these stories.
Sure. No, that's great. I mean, I like what you're doing, but it's cool that you're sort of embracing something else and moving to something that might, I mean, I don't know, expand your visibility, if that's the correct term. I'm not sure. I mean,
if you're looking at it at a completely like commercial standpoint, it is beneficial.
Sure.
But I'm not really doing it for those reasons. I'm really doing it because I want to tell these stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying like I won't ever do poetic one-shots ever again.
Yeah.
That's something that I love doing so much, and I'm definitely going to go back to it at some point.
Yeah.
But right now, I feel like these are the stories that I want to share. Like,
sure.
I've always had like, I have so many freaking ideas. I have like a notebook that has like, hundreds of ideas in there.
Sure.
And I've always had like a certain order of the stories that I wanted to tell. And like Elysian falls right in place of like, this is the story that I want to tell next.
Oh, that's great. Well, I guess one of the sort of things that I wanted to ask you, you know, being in the United States, I mean, I have interviewed many people from overseas, but mm-hmm. I mean, looking at our market from the outside, like, what are your observations of that? Like, what are your observations of, like, you know, seeing, I mean, comics is obviously European, Japanese, obviously, but mm-hmm. the American comics market has been translated into mega movie, mega billion. I mean, you mentioned the X-Men movies earlier on. Like, what is your sort of observation on, you know, being where you are and seeing how comics have grown and the possibilities of what you can do with them?
I mean, I think the possibilities are endless, really. Like, aside from, like, the big three, if you're going to put it, like, Marvel, Image, and DC, there are so many amazing stories being told by people from all over the world. And I'm glad that we have, like, a community where these stories are being, you know, told and shared. I don't think there's any kind of limitation, really. Or, you know, I think my biggest disadvantage, honestly, is the fact that I can't be present for, like, uh-huh. the con scene. Because that's where the networking happens. That's where a lot of people get exposed and, you know, a lot of networking happens. I feel like I'm kind of missing out by not being able to be there and to attend those cons and just like shake hands and get to know people on a personal level. But other than that, I've really not faced any difficulty entering the industry from where I'm at.
Oh, great.
Which is, I think, you know, thanks to the internet, you know, we really like connecting with people from all over and you're able to do anything. But as for like the stories being told, I do think there's like a huge sea of stories that's going by unnoticed.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are so many comics coming out every single Wednesday and Tuesday. It's impossible for you to spotlight or highlight everything.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad that I was able to put out my story and for people to find it in a some sort of capacity. Like, I'm not saying it's like the most successful indie comic book of all time. But I'm glad that I was able to find an audience. I'm glad that there are people who are like you, who are, you know, giving a platform for me to tell my story and to share about my comic book, you know?
Sure, sure. No, I mean, that's very... One of the small complaints about doing something like this, like a podcast, is that there's a lot of times where it's like, I want to read something and it's like, I don't get a chance to read it because it's like, oh, I'm going to go interview somebody or I got to go watch a movie, like things like that. Like, and especially when I was writing reviews on my site, which I don't do anymore necessarily because... You know, I would write a review and then that person would come on the site. We'd do the podcast. You know, it's like it's double. But anyway, the point being that one of the pleasures of it is, you know, I sometimes there's something I think I might want to read. And then I come across something like this and I'm like, oh, I like this. This is very different. You know what I mean? And I get exposed to things I might not have always been exposed to. And the ability to talk to people like you, you know, who are creating those things. So again, I'm very thankful to you for sharing this with me, to reaching out to me, you know, via your publicist, of course, and us finally being able to connect. And I'm just glad that your family is okay and that you're doing well. And I can't wait to see what else you put out because this project is strong enough for me to go like, hey, I want to see what these people do next.
Well, thank you so much. That, I mean, that means a lot, really. I, you know, I'm hoping that I'll be able to continue telling stories. It does get difficult at times because comics are a very slow industry.
Yeah.
So it may be a while before I'm on the shelves again, but hopefully within, either late this year or next year, I'll be able to put something out.
Yeah. Well, you're always welcome back as long as I'm still around. So it is called Part-Time Fanboy for a reason, but where can people find you online?
I'm mostly available on Instagram and Twitter. My handle is @NS_Abdulhaq, which is just my first name and my surname. Okay. And I'm very active there. I, you know, post mostly on there. I do have a Facebook, but I don't really use it that much.
Yeah.
And, you know, now with Twitter collapsing on itself, I'm looking into other avenues, but nothing has really stuck for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, those two are like where you can find me.
Gotcha. No, that's great. That's great. So, do your name for me again, because I'll just mess it up and embarrass myself. So please, it's Anas
Abdulhaq.
Okay, great. And the book is Etheris, and it's out through Source Point Press. Can you get it digitally on their site as well? Or
if you'd like to read Etheris online, it is available on Global Comics. The first 9 pages are for free. And then if you have like a subscription, you could read the whole thing.
Nice.
And if you like a physical copy, you could order it through your local comic book shop. There are still some copies in stock through Diamond and Lunar Distribution. So it's very easily, if you just order it, you can get it the next week.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Anas. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you getting on here and I appreciate you sharing this with me. Honestly, anybody that's out there, search down Etheris from Source Point Press. I mean, I very much enjoyed it and loved it. And if you're looking for something different and very heartfelt and, you know, very deep, I would recommend this book. Any final thoughts?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I just really appreciate the chance.
Absolutely. And you're very welcome back anytime. I will wrap this up by saying that my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on our website, parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are on Facebook and Instagram, not on Twitter anymore. Kids, drop Twitter. I'm sorry. It's terrible. Anyway, check us out on parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. Check out Etheris. It is a beautiful, lyrical, poetic book. I think that you will enjoy it. It is something very much different. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time fanboy.